You're listening to Sipping on Some Crime podcast, hosted by Aaron. This podcast covers sensitive and triggering subjects, explicit language, and mature content which may not be suitable for children. As always, all parties are innocent until proven guilty.
Welcome back to part two, the special update episode on Diane T. Francis series, Seeking Diane. Like I said in the first update, if you have not listened to the mini-series, stop here. Please go back and listen to the first three episodes so you will not be lost. Me and Sherry spent months trying to get together at the right time to record an update episode. And our lives have just been hectic and crazy, pretty much like everyone else's. And it's been near impossible to both land on the same day. So when she messaged me last week and said she had a day open in a few days, we made it work. Like I said in the previous episode, part one of the update, we did go ahead and we spoke about her relationship with her grandmother, Rose, her relationship with her grandfather, David. There's going to be the update on the does that we were waiting on confirmation from and so much more. So here's my interview with Sherry.
So perfectly back to our normal selves. I missed your face so much.
Thank you.
Like always. I love that we have that bond where we can like go months without seeing each other, and then like it's like nothing,
right? We back to norm.
Yeah, it's just like right back to it. I think that's the best part. So definitely, I know I got a lot of messages about people being like, so where's Sherry now? What's happening? Where's she at? When are you gonna do an update episode? What's happening? And it's like, well, you know, the pandemic hit and life got a little hectic for us, but
yeah,
we'll definitely check in. So what has been going on? Anything new, I guess? What have you been doing during the pandemic with Diane's case? Or have you kind of stepped back and just been focusing on getting your family through this whole pandemic?
Well, a lot of it, excuse me, has been, you know, focusing on the pandemic. And my son's father's company went out of business. And so after 25 years and open, this company was owned by his father. And so with their parental unit in the home being out of work, I kind of had to go get a job type thing. And he's still been looking for work. So, and then, you know, just trying to keep my son entertained while also not being able to bring him pretty much anywhere has been really impossible. So I've been working on that a lot. And as far as my mom's case, I did get a text message from the officer on her case. I don't know why I couldn't think of a word for that just now, but I'm fine. I'm okay.
It's fair.
the detective, there we go. The detective on her case, Cogburn, and he finally got a response from the University of North Texas stating that they have run my DNA and that they're pretty much just seeking more solid DNA. So like from her mother or her father. And of course my sister, as soon as I showed her, was like, I'll give my DNA. And I was like, well, Jess, that really wouldn't, it'd be the same as me kind of submitting mine. We have the same mother, same father. So it'd essentially be the same line of DNA that they'd be looking at. And to just really get a for sure match, they would want, you know, her parents' DNA.
And as far as David and Rose, how do they feel? Do they know about this? How do they feel about it?
Well, an update on Rose, which is probably gonna you're probably going to hang up the phone and be like, oh my God, I'm going to kill her.
Oh no.
So I got a message from my grandma after not answering for a while because the pandemic hit and because I had to jump into, you know, after being a stay-at-home mom for 2 years and then even actually longer than that, because prior to being a stay-at-home mom, the whole 9 months I was pregnant, I babysat for my sister and my cousin, Cassandra. And so was pretty much a stay-at-home caretaker.
Right.
For a year and a half, and then a stay-at-home mom for 2 years. So didn't work for like a good 4 years. Finally had to jump into the whole like public scene of finding a job and like interviewing and applying and all that stuff. I haven't been able to call Rose because, as you know, when I speak with her, it's like a couple hours, if not more. And I really have to set aside that time to make sure I can focus on talking to her and responding with like care. And I'm not just like, oh, I gotta go, my kid's hungry, or, you know, I gotta go, I have to be to work in 15 minutes. I didn't want to call if I didn't have the time. So as guilty as I feel, I haven't spoken to her. And she left me this voicemail that was just so nasty about how she knows I'm talking to my mom, and she knows I'm in, and she knows I'm in contact with her, and I'm just not answering. And so I kind of haven't found it in my heart to like let go of that yet, and so I just haven't actually reconnected with her. I won't even lie, but I just was kind of offended because, like, you know, if I was in contact with her, Rose would be like one of the first people I would call. That's her mother, like.
Right. You'd be seeing like, it from the rooftops to anybody.
Right. So I just was kind of offended by that and a little taken back. So I've just kind of, you know, took my own time to just be separated from her for a little bit. But as far as my grandfather goes, we're fine, as on, you know, good terms and everything. It's just his Facebook got hacked. So this was another thing that happened. My boyfriend was just sitting downstairs with my son one day, and I think I was sleeping or taking a nap or something. I had work, and I woke up and came out and was like, hey, what's going on? And he's like, did you know your grandpa messaged me? And I was like, no. And I was like, why would he message you? And he's like, I don't know, he's acting really weird, I don't know what's going on. And I was like, give me the phone, let me see. So I started looking through the messages, and basically, my grandfather's account had messaged my boyfriend and asked him for help. He said, can you help me? And, like, you know my grandfather.
Right.
That's like, not... out here writing books about people. He doesn't need help. He doesn't ask for help. Like, he's the helper. So the fact that he was, you know, here, and especially asking me, his granddaughter, he would never. Like, I could never, because he's just such a respectful human being when it comes to like that kind of stuff. Asking his younger granddaughter for help, I don't think, you know, I couldn't see him doing that at all. Like, maybe his son David, or, you know, Rose or something, maybe one of the elders in my family, I could see him asking for help from them, but he would never reach out to me, I don't think. So unless it was something to do with Diane, then maybe. But so he's like, can you help me? I need to get to the store. And I'm just like, what is going on? So I message the account or whatever, and I'm just like, who is this? And the person said David Francis. Like, they just took the information off his account and was like feeding that to me. And I was like, I know who my grandpa is. That's not what I'm asking you. Like, freaks. So I called my grandpa's cell phone because I was just like, no, forget this. And he doesn't answer the phone. So then I call his house. And he answers, and I'm like, hey, are you messaging me on Facebook? He's like, no, my account got hacked. Like, just delete that person, like, block it, whatever. So I was like, oh my God, they're over here asking me for money. I was getting ready to send them like a Western Union or something. Cause, like, if it was my grandpa, God forbid, like, and he's stuck somewhere, I would definitely help him. But,
right.
So then he was off Facebook for a really long time, and he just made an account, and he doesn't seem to answer the messages on there. And he's changed his cell phone number, I think, too. So we've kind of been out of contact, but I do plan on eventually asking him, because I could see him being more apt to giving his DNA, and also it being received faster because he is in Florida where Cogburn is. So, I mean, not the same area, but same state.
Right.
And so my grandma sending hers will take much longer than Dave just giving his right in the same state. So.
And if he's willing to travel to Cogburn. Right.
Or vice versa, because Cogburn did say prior that he was willing to go meet with my grandfather. So we'll see. And, you know, who knows what could come of that? Like, maybe my grandpa will finally give the dental records that Cogburn asked for, like, years ago or a year ago.
It'd be nice for Cogburn to get a chance to interview him, too, because,
yeah,
like we always say, finding out who Diane was as a young person as a huge chunk that we're still missing, because that leads us to kind of understanding her behaviors in the future. So Right. Maybe there's some questions, or maybe he could gauge more. Not that I believe that your grandfather is guilty of anything as far as her disappearance or anything like that, but just Right. Kind of gauging her personality more than maybe we can.
Right. And, you know, there's also a different perspective too. Like, it's one thing for Cogburn to pick up the phone and speak to Diane's daughter, who was 10 years old the last time she saw the woman physically, than it is to speak to someone who was that person's parent. You know, that's a different, like, yes, I had a child mindset. You know what I mean? That was my mommy. So to me, she could have done no wrong. Like, mind you, I do know that she did wrong, and I did recognize the wrong when she was doing it, but, like, I still loved her through it all. It was like, you know, she will always be my mom, so that will never change. But her father, that's a parental perspective. You know, that's like, no, my daughter was doing this, and she did do these things, and, you know, I did try and make her learn from this and that. I never taught my mother really anything but how to be a mother, because, you know, I was her child. But Right. Him, it's different, and I think maybe speaking with him could give him, like, I don't know, maybe a more adult perspective, I guess.
Right. I completely agree. Yeah, for sure. Because he also saw things through different eyes. We know as parents now, the stuff that we shield our children from, like, even I know your mom made attempts, even in her worst times, to shield you, you know? So for him to be able to see the stuff and have those conversations with her that you would have never been privy to,
yeah,
would be great to get some information. On the other side of that, how is Jessica handling everything with the pandemic and looking for your mom? Like, how has her feelings changed? Is she still, you know, really involved, less involved?
I would say she's probably less involved. Not necessarily by choice. It's just kind of because I've taken a step back. Like, she faces half of what I deal with. So if I'm facing even less than I was, then obviously she's going to face less, because I'm not feeding anything to her at the moment. You know what I mean? Like, I haven't been interviewing, and I've kind of put that stuff on the back burner for the moment. As sad as that makes me.
Kicked everybody. Yeah. Like, it's completely fair. Please don't ever feel bad about that. Like, you have to live your life too. And your mom wants you to live your life.
I went out and was like, you're getting a new laptop, you're getting a headset, you're going to start doing this again. And I did it. And, like, so, you
but
know,
it
the
takes
will
a lot. I think people need to understand, like, you also have this life that you have to live, and you're going through all the stuff that we're all going through on top of other just natural things that go wrong or right in your life that you want to celebrate, but then you're also, like, missing this person and having to put that work in. And people don't realize sometimes you have to step back, and it's good to step back sometimes.
And I, you know, for as many years as I've been doing this, I always have that little break in time where it's like, okay, these things are more important right now, or, like, you know, not necessarily more important, but just, like, first and foremost, you know, kind of thing. Getting the job, that was kind of like, you know, we as a family in this household faced something that we didn't plan on, that business shutting down after 25 years. That was my child's grandfather's livelihood and my child's father's livelihood. So to face that all at once, it was like, okay, you're gonna have to step up and be the breadwinner for the moment, you know, at least. And we've kind of just been trying to face that with the most positive attitude. And, you know, I knew I could get back to this. So it was like, I'll do this. And then when I feel comfortable in the job, you know, I've been there 4 or 5 months now. So it was like, okay, you can start picking up your real focus, your right. mom's life again.
Well, learning how to just fit all that in is crazy. Like trying to work and try to do this and try to be a mom and try to be the good girlfriend, you know, and it's a lot to ask of anybody. So, you know, I hope you never feel bad about that. Like, and I know you do, cause it's,
I'll try.
Cause it eats at you. I mean, it does. We talk to family members all the time that like they have some crisis happening, like real life, real time right now. And they just feel so guilty for giving that time away. But I think it's like the most natural thing. And I think you guys are super warriors to be able to do it all, because
you do it too.
A lot. I worry about all of you. Like, you know, I'm close to a few of you and I really worry, like when you guys start to feel like, oh man, I'm not doing enough. I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, you guys are amazing.
I told my boyfriend yesterday, because I was like, yeah, I'm going to have to do an interview with Aaron, just so you know, if you don't mind watching him, you know. He was like, no, whatever, go ahead. And I was like, well, you know, she is my, like, best friend that I've only met once.
That is so true. Like, I have to, like, meet you and then move. I'm like, I was there for 5 years. Where
I
know. Like... don't understand it, like how the universe was like, okay, you guys are gonna meet each other, you're gonna have this deep connection, and then you're gonna move, so have fun with that. Like,
yeah, good luck.
Yeah, and you're gonna need each other through some crap, but you'll be miles away, just you'll be okay.
I think the universe was like, I can count on you guys to make it work, it'll be fine.
Like, let's make these two's lives more interesting. Here you go, have fun with that. And it does, it works. Yeah, I'm always thinking about you guys and what you're doing, and especially being in Arizona, like the cases have been crazy. I'm always like, oh, my people in Arizona, I worry so much. It's this real life stress, and you're like, okay, well, now I've got to kind of put that aside, and like, you know, you've got these thoughts every day of like, where's my mom? What's she doing? And you know, how do you deal with that? Like, do you have friends that you call? Do you seek therapy? Do you like cry to your boyfriend? Like, how, for other people that are just stepping into this, like they're missing someone, how do you deal all these years?
Well, it really depends, you know, like everybody's missing person is different, you know. Like, I find in my heart sometimes that I'm lucky to have the missing person that I have. And that might sound bad, but just let me get there. Because she was such a strong-willed and, like, firecracker kind of girl. Like, if I can count on the fact that if somebody walked into my grocery store and started shooting, I feel like I would know what to do, then I just find it in my heart to know that she would know what to do. And she taught me everything. You know, she made me who I am. I wouldn't be me or have her little quirks and, you know, funny things, or like look like her or act like her or sound like her, or, you know, if I wasn't made from her. And if I'm just a little piece of what she was, like, not to say I don't have to worry about her, because I sure as hell do. But when I start to get in that, like, oh man, I wonder what she's doing. And then I'm like, no, you know what? You're okay. So no matter where she is, she's okay. Like, I have to just, you find that in myself every time I start thinking about it, because it'll just eat you alive if you don't, you know, just remember who that person was. Now, if you have someone that wasn't strong-willed, like I couldn't say the same, and I don't know what I would do if she was just this weak, you know, good for nothing, like slum of a person. I don't know what I would do. So, you know, the person she was when I was 10, not to say she's that person anymore, I don't know, but I just keep that person in my mind. And that's the person that I picture fighting this world. And when I picture her being that person, I'm slightly okay with it, because then I could see her surviving it. You know what I mean? Like, if she wasn't the person she was, I don't know. But I just have to find that every day. And then, you know, sometimes I wake up and I'm like, well, maybe she's at peace. Maybe she's not even fighting this world anymore. So, you know, when you have no idea, it's hard. Because from one day to the next, you could have different conclusions in your head of what could have happened or what if or, you know. But all in all, you just have to try to have faith that whatever you think could be happening to that person either isn't, or that they're surviving it. They're fighting it off. That's all you can do. You know?
Yeah. I mean, and I'm sure certain things trigger it, even if, you know, you don't wake up that day, you know, you like wake up to a good day, but then something happens or you see someone that looks like them, you know, you have those triggers throughout the time for sure. And that's an amazing thing that you have that, yeah, she's a firecracker. Like I can't, just every story we've ever heard about her and everybody that talks about her is like, you knew when she was in the room, like she just was the funniest. She was the feistiest, but with a good heart. And it's hard to have that like feisty and good heart. And she seemed to combine both of them perfectly. So she's a badass. Definitely.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes I'm like, you know, what if, you know, because your brain tells you all kinds of crazy, stupid things that, you know, obviously people shouldn't be thinking, but we can't help it. You know, what if she got kidnapped? And then I'm like, and then I have to laugh because I'm like, I'd hate to fucking come across her and want to kidnap her ass because
she'd be swinging.
Good 100%. Luck,
dude. Yeah.
Like, good luck. You know, so you just have to try and keep that for your person. And I think that is really what most of the time keeps me going. I know the other day, like you said, like seeing someone that like looks like her. I saw someone in the store that kind of reminded me of her when she was 37, though. And then I had to remind myself that she's almost 53. So that wouldn't be what she would look like anymore, you know? And then I just kind of moved on with my day. It wasn't like, is that her? Like, oh, that looks just like her. I wonder if that's her. Like, oh, I wonder if she comes in this store. You know, I didn't let it continue. It was just like, and then, you know, I started to think for a moment too, even if I did ever see her in my store, if she's there, I would hope that she would have, I'm not, what am I going to do? Run up to her? You know, like I would have to leave that up to her. So I kind of just kind of, you know, continue with my day and like, go back to loading shelves or whatever I was doing. And you know, everyone that surrounded my mom from her past that did like really bad things, I always hear them say something like, well, you know, that's just how I was raised, or like, that's how I was brought up, or that stuff was just around when I was a kid, so that's why I ended up like that. Your mindset will and always, you know, is and always will be your choice. What you choose to feed your mind and what you continue to feed your mind is what is going to be. That's what it's what you're going to be. So if you're constantly thinking these, you know, like negative thoughts, that's what you're feeding your brain. That's your food for the day. And so if you end up crying yourself to sleep that night, you maybe should look at the menu that you fed yourself that day and maybe change it to, you know, I hope she's doing well. You know, maybe I don't know what happened to her, but I hope whatever it is, it's good. You know, or like I said, if she does come to my store, I would hope that she would approach me. But if not, you know, like you can't feed it. If you feed it, it's just going to grow and grow and grow and grow and grow until it eats you and swallows you whole. And you cut it at the source, that's it. Like, that, and I mean, I'm not the greatest at it. Don't let me sit here and brag or get egotistic. I'm, you know, I have my days, but that's just kind of how I've kept going all these years, I guess.
Kind of brings you to help you center when you feel like out of control, like it, right. Those emotions feel out of control. Now, is she frozen in time for you at 37?
I would say maybe my picture of her and like that thing that I posted from MyHeritage kind of like really freaked me out for like this because I haven't seen a video of my mom in I don't know how many years, probably 16 years. And so to see her face move at all was just odd to me, you know? And so yeah, I think my photographic memory of her is stuck at 37. But that's just because I haven't seen her since that time. So of course my mind can't depict what she might look like now. I mean, I can try, but my sister's kind of always been the artsy one, not me. And we saw how the PI did with that, so.
Yeah, no. Just absolutely not. No, yeah. That was
Horrid.
like, what are you working off of? Like, were you drunk? Like, it's just you're just like
Was your hand drunk? I don't.
Yeah, like, I mean, I can understand if you were like, look, I was drinking, guys, let me try again. But that was not, yeah, that was, Yeah, totally not cool. And I mean, I think of like people that I last saw. And yeah, I think sometimes our minds do get like so frozen in that time. But you've seen pictures of her, like her mugshot. How old was she in the last mugshot that you have?
That was actually 2005 as well. So, same time period. She was 37. And I mean, we can guesstimate, you know, obviously you get a certain amount of more wrinkles on your face and gravity takes a little hold on your face and, you know, you get forehead lines and crow's feet and things like that. Yeah, I'm already getting them, girl.
Yeah,
But,
it's from doing this all year. Like,
right? Or, it's all those Karens in the store.
it really is. It is. Well, and then have like in the beginning there for a while, you were getting lots of messages from people from her past. Are you still receiving like messages from people from? I counted the other day. Like, we made a list, and I have it on here, and it's like known associates basically. And so if we take out your family, there's 34 people that had messaged you in under 6 months, like saying, I remember her. This is what I want to tell you about her. Like, that's a lot of data to take in.
Yep.
And I don't think people realize how inundated with messages like you were getting and how involved you were trying to talk to these people, figure out if they're legitimate or, you know, do they really know her? Is that still happening?
Not as much anymore. I know I still have all of them on my page, and you know, moving forward, they're all willing to talk to me again, or you know, said if you need any reiteration or whatever, to feel free to reach out. So, of course, moving forward, I will be reaching back out to those people to, you know, just go back over what we discussed and everything like that, how they knew her, what's some cute stories, things like that. Like, I had, you know, a couple people tell me she used to hang out at the Macy's, in the mall in New Jersey where they lived in Somerville.
I don't
I
know
don't
how
know
to
if
say
that's
it
correct.
either.
Yeah, one of those.
I can't
New
even say,
Jersey.
what is it? Boonton, New Jersey? Like,
Boonton, yeah.
Boonton? Like, I don't even, I'm like, I'm gonna pronounce this and I'm gonna get slaughtered online because I'm like, Boontown, Boonton, Boonton? Like, I have no clue. Why is New Jersey so complicated?
It's Boston. That's what we're calling
Like, we're just gonna.
Okay. Not to get confused with Boston, the actual place.
Right. I'm gonna need like, you know, David to have picked like clearer towns to move to. 'Cause and then like the river's name, I'm like Rashitiki Tak dang it. Like, and
You're
I give
like,
up.
couldn't you have just named it John? Like, what the heck?
Yeah, I'm like, so he went down by the river. We're just gonna cut it. I can't, like
Went down by the water
right.
and something happened.
New Jersey's complicated.
Yeah, so I was born in a non-complicated city or town. Is
In
it
Jersey, right?
a town or is it a city?
That depends, I think. I don't know
County?
what de you know dedicates like this is a town, this is a city.
I don't know. And what's a, well, let's not go there. When I lived in
Yeah.
Indiana, I lived in a township. So
Oh, yep.
who even knows
There's
what that is?
and I'm like currently outside of a city limit, so I'm not in a city, but I'm not yeah, it's I'm on a farm that's like not
You
in
live
city
off the
limits.
grid.
I wish.
So I was born in Long Branch, and my sister was born in Morristown. So those are two uncomplicated.
Super easy. See, I love that. Absolutely love that. Now that brings me back to your dad. When's the last time you talked to your dad? How does he feel about you looking for your mom?
So I talk to my dad a lot. Usually it's just like small talk. I'm a really bad daughter and I still have Christmas gifts from like two Christmases ago that I was supposed to send him and my grandma. And now I've added birthday gifts to it from this year. So it's just I'm just going to send the whole house by the time I'm done. Right. Probably.
Big awesome package.
And he's probably like, what is this? Because I'll message him and I'll be like, what's your address again? I'm going to send this, I swear. And then like months will go by and I'll be like, what's your address again?
I'm the same. It's awful.
I'm like, I'm sorry, life, you know, like I'm trying. So, but it's funny because I found the perfect birthday card or no, perfect Christmas card. And it says, sorry, these Christmas gifts are late. But I wanted to make sure that I got them out for your birthday. When's your birthday again? And like his birthday already passed and I missed his Christmas gift. So it was like the perfect card because it's just sarcasm. Like, when was your birthday again? Knowing it already passed. So
that is perfect.
I have to send that though. I talk to him all the time. He really doesn't get involved in the whole mom thing only because like, and I don't know that I've ever clarified this just because it's not widely talked about. The reasons that my parents split are kind of unknown. I know my dad says that my mom started cheating on him, like when she was pregnant with me. And that's when the drugs started too, apparently.
David says that too in his testimony.
Yeah. So, and it's weird because, I mean, I'd like to think that there's nothing wrong with me, but my mom apparently did a bunch of drugs when she was pregnant with me and slept with a bunch of dudes.
So. You're perfect. There's nothing wrong with you.
But he didn't really have a say in her leaving. So I guess when in 1995, I want to say, is when my mom took me and my sister and left him for John Schmidt, the man in the wheelchair, in all those photos that I posted of her, just for clarification for everybody listening. She left my dad for him, and I was 2 at that time. So, and my sister was maybe 3, going on 4, somewhere in there. And he moved back to Jersey because she took us and left him with nothing. So, and I mean, John Schmidt's trailer was across from my dad and my mom's trailer. So she literally just like walked us out of his life straight to the next trailer over kind of thing. And he, like I said, kind of with his tail in between his legs, went back to Jersey to live with his mom because he didn't know what else to do. He only went to Florida for my mother. So, and me and Jessica, of course. So once she did that, he was kind of like, I guess I'll go back home. I don't, you know, nothing I can do. And to this day, still kind of owes child support for that whole situation. So, you know, I mean, I can't say what happened between them because I was only 2. Heck, I probably couldn't say much of anything at that time. So
definitely. Does he feel more, does he seem to portray them more like, my heart was broken, I wanted this to work, and it didn't? Or the whole, like, it didn't work, I understood, and I walked away?
There's actually a bit of choice words that my dad used to describe that situation. He said that my mom was never the girl that he wanted to have kids with. She was just the party girl. So that was his opinion on that. So I think maybe after, like... And it's weird because when Jessica was born and I wasn't there yet, you know, I hadn't arrived, they seemed like a happy family. Like my dad loved Jessica, like in all the photos, there's huge Christmases and they're always at the grandparents' house. And then I came and it was like everything changed. My mom started cheating on him. She started doing drugs when she was pregnant with me. I don't know if it was like postpartum maybe, which back then wasn't really like a widely known thing. It wasn't really talked about even if people knew
Right.
you had it, they didn't speak about it because it was like, oh, she wants to murder her children. You know, like they didn't talk about
Yeah.
that back
You
then.
were just
So,
supposed to bring this baby home and be perfectly happy and content.
right.
Yeah.
And let's not forget that this was like my sister was born in 1991. Stephanie was born in 1985. So there was 6 years in there that my mom had to like recover over the funeral for the baby. She never even wanted a funeral for that baby. They forced her to have like a service. They forced her to like hold it and stuff like that. The baby was already deceased. So then 6 years later, she has her first child that's living, and it's Jessica, you know, and like then 1 year and 10 months later, she gets pregnant with me. So not to say that 6 years isn't a long time to recover from something like that, but who knows? Like, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know if she ever wanted children. Not to say that, like, you know, when she got pregnant with Jessica, she didn't pick up the role of a mother and like actually accept it and love doing that. But like prior to that, after Stephanie, I think she might have been scorned, you know, like from that situation and kind of like really hurt. That her parents forced her into the funeral and all of that. So I think maybe Jessica, it was like, okay, I'm doing this. I'm going to be a mom, you know. And then maybe postpartum set in. I don't really know. And then maybe drugs were to like heal that situation. Maybe. I don't really know. I was in the womb, so.
Right. Well, and it's hard because they say that her family says that Diane was doing drugs since 11, 12.
Right.
Then we have Stephanie and she loses Stephanie and that causes her to jump down the hole more into deeper drugs. So when she meets your dad and then becomes pregnant with you and Jessica, like, was she doing drugs all the way up to that point, and then, you know, the clarity of pregnancy, and then like, okay, we've got to stop. I mean, no one really talks about her addiction in between that window.
Yeah, I'm not sure if like because I know that there was like the assumption from Joanne, whether it was assumption or fact, I don't really know. I know Joanne was there. Because you have to remember my Aunt Joanne was 16 years old when she married my Uncle David. She was, I think, 17 or 18 when she had Cassie. She was 19 or 20 when she had David. So she was just a kid, and my mom was like, I don't know, a few years older than her, maybe like 6 years older than her. And Joanne said that she would watch my mom go into Donnie's room or Greg's room, one of Rita's kids, and they would do drugs together too. So to me, it's like if Joanne was 16 or 17 and my mom was like, I don't know. If Joanne is 47 or 46 now, and my mom's 53, how much older is my mom than Joanne?
36, 37, 48, 49, 50, 51, 52. About 6 years.
Yeah, so that's what I guesstimated. 6 years. If my mom was 6 years older than Joanne and Joanne was 17 or 18, my mom was like 23 when
Yeah.
she was doing drugs with Donnie and Greg. I guess. I don't know. So that's like the first instance of drugs that I heard.
What do you think she had some addiction issues leading up from Stephanie to, you know, finding out she was pregnant with Jessica? Do you think she was like, when she found out she was pregnant, you know, she was like, I don't judge people who can't put down addiction during pregnancy. I think you're an asshole if you do, because you haven't put yourself in those shoes. So, you know,
Yeah.
for our listeners, like, please don't judge, you know, what people go through. But do you think she was able to say, kind of curb it or put it down, or do you think she was even facing addiction when she was pregnant with Jessica?
I'm not really sure. I know that, you know, I didn't have the same situation as my mom a year or so ago, but I did lose a unborn child, I guess. And I would not judge anyone for the precautions or, you know, therapeutic measures that they choose after something like that. I don't care what it is. I don't care if you smoke meth after you lose a baby, because I couldn't function for like at least a week after it happened to me. And I didn't even get to like see or hold or touch or even see a picture of the fetus that was inside my body. I don't even know how developed it was. I'm assuming like 3 to 6 weeks, somewhere in there. But, you know, it was ectopic. So I found out probably fairly soon. It's not like that thing was growing inside of me for months at a time, and then all of a sudden I just lost it one day. Like, she was pregnant. I think the paperwork said 23 to 35 weeks or something like that, pregnant. So she was a little, you know, more progressed than I was. And I can't say what that would do that to me mentally, but I could see someone turning to drugs possibly because of something like that. I could tell you if I was prone to do drugs, I'd probably still be on them right now after losing the baby I lost. So, but I don't do that stuff. I just, it does not appeal to me. But
right. And she was so young. She was so young. Like, so you're not even mentally mature enough to deal with the idea of becoming a mother, the adult world, and then to lose something like that. And then everybody kind of forcing you to deal with it. Like,
yeah,
and I get where they were coming from. Like, as a mother, as a parent, knowing how important that child is, I can see where they were like, hey, later on, you don't want to say, I wish I would have.
Yeah.
But not everybody needed that kind of closure. And maybe Diane didn't need that kind of closure.
Yeah. You know, I almost wish that the paperwork kind of mentioned maybe why the baby was lost. That might give us a little more insight as to why she was so apt to not want anything. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, everybody is different again, but I couldn't see myself losing a baby at 23 to 35 weeks, even if I wasn't with the father anymore, even if my parents were against me being pregnant, even if, you know, whatever the case may be, I couldn't see myself just being like, no, I don't want anything to do with it. No, I don't want a funeral. I don't want to name it. I don't want to hold it. You know, I feel like I'm being forced. I don't understand in my head what brought her to that decision, if that makes any sense. Like, was it a harsh loss? Did it hurt? Like, was it painful? Like, did you hate the dad? Were you sexually abused and that's how you got pregnant? You know, was it like kind of like a rape situation? Why was there no father around? Like, these are the questions I wonder. And again, just the loss of a baby in general would make someone turn to drugs. But then you have all these other things to consider that could have been possibilities that could have pushed her towards drugs as well. Like, if it was a rape situation, heck yeah, I'd be doing drugs. I'm sorry, but like,
right, you know, for
and
sure.
Then your parents forced you to have a funeral service too, and then that could have been part of it. Like, no way. If it were like, you know, sexual abuse by a family member, even, that's a possibility. Or even just a high school boyfriend that you hated, and then your parents force you to have a funeral for that baby that you lost. Like, I don't know what I would do, but I'd probably be real upset. I could tell you that.
And not mentally able to really handle that. And we don't know what blows my mind is we don't know who the father is. And it doesn't blow my mind that, like, maybe Diane wasn't comfortable talking about it, but she kind of grew up in a tight knit, it seems like, community. Like, everybody knew her. She, you know, she was kind of unavoidable. Like, she lit up a room when she walked in, her presence was there. You would think that if she was dating someone or this was some kind of relationship, everybody would know who it was. The parents would have asked, kind of pushed more, like, mm-hmm. who is this? But like, there's nobody has any clue. Like, it's just not talked about.
And again, going back too, is just like, you know, and maybe everybody's family morals are different, and maybe everyone has different beliefs in what they do and don't do, but I'm sorry, if my firstborn child was having her first child, I'd remember who the dad was.
Right.
No doubt about it.
And if she's not telling me why, then I need to sit down and find out, like, do I need to get you counseling? Like, we need to, is there somebody you feel like you can talk to about it? Because holding this in for whatever, to me, is alarm bells. If you're not telling me who it is or how it happened, like, you know, is it a boyfriend? Is it, was it, you know, you went on a date and it was just, you know, a one-time thing, whatever. I will love my child and accept, you know, come home anytime. I'm going to love you, accept your child. But for your emotional well-being and for your child's well-being, we need to talk about how this came about. And are you safe? And are you okay? Are you afraid it's going to happen again? Are you scared of a violent reaction if you say who the father is?
Right.
So
that's my opinion.
Like, high school friends at all know anything?
They said that there's some possibilities that it was that Michael Rowe gentleman, but I believe he's deceased at this point, so that wasn't someone we could get in contact with. And then there was someone else she was dating around those, you know, few years that these people knew her and went to school with her, but they said that they didn't think that it was him because Michael Rowe was more close to that 1985 year when she gave birth. So and I had a recording, or I still have a recording of one of her friends that I spoke to. It was a really nice woman. And she said, you know, I wanted to tell you that you have a sister. And I asked her if she was talking about Stephanie. And she goes, yeah. And I was like, yeah, I do, but she's deceased. You know, she's buried in Somerville, New Jersey. And she goes, oh, she did die. And that was her reaction, is like, there was rumors in high school that Diane had a baby and the baby died, but no one ever knew. And like, as far as Joanne talks about it, she just says, like, we didn't talk about that stuff. We didn't talk about it. You know, she like hid the pregnancy at school, like wore bigger clothes so that people wouldn't notice as much. But like, people knew. They didn't ask, because obviously she was trying to hide it. Obviously she was trying to make it like an unknown thing. Her parents didn't approve. It was against their like religion. They were more Catholic, I think, or Christian. And so the fact that she even had sex at that age and was not married was like, oh my, like, don't tell anyone. It's embarrassing. But then again, they were the ones that pushed for the funeral service to like make it a deal, a big deal. Right. So, like, if you wanted it on the hush-hush, why have, like, a huge funeral service? But, again, that might go with, like, if they didn't push a service, that would have been against their religion, maybe, because that's not how you lay someone to rest. So, I'm not really sure. Like, there's a bunch of factors of, like, you know, maybes, stuff like that, what ifs. But I don't know if she was just embarrassed or felt punished. Maybe.
Yeah, with everybody not approving.
I think maybe the service was sort of like a punishment. Maybe they knew she didn't, you know, want it, but it was like, this is what our religion does, so you're going to do it regardless, and like, you should have never had the baby in the first place, so.
Maybe you'll think the next time kind of situation, right. For sure. With everything, like, that you've heard about her, you get through third person, basically, do you feel like you knew who your mother was before she had you? Do you feel like you have a good grasp, or do you feel like you're still searching for that?
I feel like she was, you know, just I think she was a good person put in a tough spot. You know, again, going back to when she was 12 and her parents divorced and they both say they put way too much on her, I think that might have, you know, pushed her towards the rebellious lifestyle a little bit as well. Is like, well, my parents can just do whatever they want. They're breaking our family up and putting all this stuff on me, so maybe I just do whatever I want, you know, kind of thing. And then getting pregnant with Stephanie in high school, you know, few years later or 5 years later, and then losing that baby and dealing with that whole scenario while also still dealing with taking care of her brothers because her parents didn't get back together. You know what I mean? Rita just came into the picture, someone she hated. So then she gets pregnant with Jessica. Then she has me. Then she leaves my dad. And then back to drugs. Like, I feel like there was many circumstances in her life where she didn't choose to, you know, going back to like my motto, she didn't choose to feed her brain healthy things. So at the end of every day, she was making the wrong decisions because, you know, I don't know what was going through her head, but I assume it's probably something like, well, F it all, you know, kind of thing. At one point or another, she got to that mindset. But, and again, like, she would go in and out because that good part of her would come back when she would try hard to do the classes and get me and Jessica back. And, you know, so it was like, I don't know. She was like a two-faced card sometimes. Sometimes it was that good side, and then sometimes she would just flip, and it would be a completely different person that nobody knew. So,
And I think, to be fair to her and to a lot of people struggling with addiction, so I've had people I love personally struggle with addiction, and you have this sense at some point where they go through it and they go through it and go through it, and they keep saying they're going to get better. And you do have this sense where you're just like, whatever. But I feel for the person on the side of that is struggling with the addiction, if you hear enough, like, whatever, you're going to fail, whatever, you're going to continue to do this behavior, then you're almost like, well, screw you guys. If that's all you think that I am, why am I putting this effort in? Or it almost feeds that insecurity inside of yourself. Like, maybe this is all I am. Like, if everyone else sees it, if everyone else feels it, like, maybe that is. And I think, yes, your family went through a lot dealing with Diane coming in and out. But I had advice from someone that actually lost someone they loved to addiction. They overdosed. And they told me, all you can do is love them. Just make sure they know you love them. Does not mean you have to financially support them or that you always have to be there or always be happy with their decisions. Just let them know you love them. And I don't know if Diane always got that.
Yeah, you know, I won't name any names, but I'm dealing with someone else in my life that's sort of making similar decisions as to Diane did. And I'm finding that it's a waste of my breath, and it infiltrates my peace to try and constantly tell that person not to do what they're doing. They know that you don't want them doing that. They know it's wrong. If they could make that switch shut off in their head, don't you think they would have done it? Like, I have just come to the conclusion that I'm there for that person, and if they need me, fine, I'm here. But I'm done stressing myself out trying to correct something that isn't my choice. I've made my choice, and I'm happy with the choices that I've made to stay away from those types of things. But if that's your choice, go ahead, and I'll be here when you come back. But I'm not going to be involved in it, and it's not going to ruin my life, you know? And sometimes I wish my uncle would have come to that conclusion that, like, no, you don't have to agree with everything I'm doing, but you can still love me and be there. You know, and that might help me make it through. And I also know that the person that I'm looking out for is never just going to disappear on me because I'm still here. You know, I'm still here checking up on that person. I'm still here staying involved in the best way I can from a distance. You know, like I said, taking my life out of it so I'm not being affected, but also still being a part of that person's life, if that makes any sense.
Exactly. And it's
hard. It's one of the hardest things I've ever had to do, but I couldn't see myself just getting to the point that my uncle and grandfather got and just saying no more.
But I think, I mean, that's got to be hard for you because you know what your mom went through. And so I think there's like a good part of you that's able to be like, look, she needed love. She needed someone to say. And so I think when I look back and I just read everything, I know that she was loved, but I don't know if she knew she was loved.
Yeah, I feel like that, you know, because like I said, even if you're not trying to intervene or like be the, you know, therapy for that person, you can still just be there. And it's like, you know, when they come to you and say, oh, I relapsed again, or, oh, I lost my kids again, or, oh, you know, I'm just down and out. I have nowhere to go again. I'm homeless again. I lost my car again. I lost my job again. And you're just there to be like, okay, so what now? Like, I'm still here. Like, that sometimes to a drug addict or, you know, someone who is trying to rehabilitate themselves, that could mean everything compared to the person who's like, let me put you in rehab. Let me buy you this. Get off the drugs. Like, stop doing that. Stop doing this. You know, you're stupid. You shouldn't do that. Like, sometimes that person to just lean on is all they're really looking for. And sometimes it's priceless, you know? And that's why I said, I wish my uncle would have just got to that point where he could exclude the mental aspect of it for himself, like take himself out mentally. Like, this isn't going to affect me on the inside, but at the same time, I can still help that person or be there. I feel like she needed that a lot. Like, just someone to be like, hey, I did this, and them not freak out or not be like, I'm leaving, or, you know, whatever.
Right. For sure. And I do feel like had she had some more support. And it's not to say that your family didn't try. Like, they tried in their capability, because we've learned as we've grown how people are, and that we have to love them for who they are and their faults. But I do, you know, I hope Diane hears like how much she was loved. So maybe she can, you know, understand that they do love her. They weren't the best at showing it sometimes, but they do love her.
Right. And I mean, you know, who are we to say the capacity of what one person can handle and what someone else can't? Like, maybe I can handle the back and forth and back and forth and back and forth of her deciding to do better and not do good and do better and not do good. Maybe they could only handle it twice. Like, I don't know. You know, I can't gauge that for them. I can gauge it for myself, and I know I'm willing to handle whatever. So, you know, of course, when I look at them and I'm like, dang, you gave up after twice? Like, that's nothing to me. But to them, that might be like, that was 15 years of my life. Like, you have no idea. So I just have to, like, you know, my battle, like I always say, it's my fight, my thing. I can't judge them for how they helped. You know, at least they did.
Right.
And, I know there's some people that just like, nope, you're done. I'm wiping my hands of you. I'll never think or talk about you ever again. Like,
right. And again, that's them protecting. Like, it's hard to not judge someone and say what kind of person you are, but that's them protecting their internal self. And, you know,
yeah,
it's, and so I guess mainly as we're wrapping up, like, my biggest thing is, what do you want people to do for Diane's case? Like, what is an impact to you that's like important? Do you want them to just share her face, learn her story? Do you want someone to reach out and say to Detective Cogburn and say, hey, like, this case is important to me? You know, do you feel like you need to put that public pressure on yet? Or do you feel like, you know, kind of where do you want to go this year, let's say?
Well, I definitely feel like, you know, like I've always said, eventually going back to those places for me personally is part of my goal personally, is to make it back to where all the places where my mom was last seen. So like that hotel and things like that. As far as like a action kind of thing, taking action on my mom's case, sharing for sure. I'm not sure that reaching out to John Cogburn would be helpful just yet, only because, again, like you said in the last interview with Missing, we kind of have to bring them something for them to make a move. So if it's just people calling and saying like, hey, I care about this case, he's going to be like, yeah, I do too. Like, I wish there was something I could move on, you know? Oh, and as a closing note, too, I still have yet to hear back from Boggs. So
he's just silent.
He has completely blocked me. It's been months now since this pandemic started. I have not heard from him. Blocked on it. Oh, we talk. He's still in the loop. He's still around. I talked to his mom. She's lovely. Love her. She was like a grandma to me. Aww. And Yeah, she's really sweet. They try and help any way they can. They share my stuff all the time. But as far as Boggs go, the one that reported her missing, he has me blocked on everything. And last I heard, he was in the hospital, and I haven't heard from him since. So prior to that, I was his daughter, and like all this stuff.
Crazy how that, like we just said, how people can just switch that
Oh,
off.
as soon as he heard the first instance of me assuming anything, and not even assuming, I just thought of it as a possibility. Like, that's weird. You know, like that's coincidental. Things started being coincidence with him a lot. Once he noticed that I realized that and was interviewing about it, radio silence since then. Nothing. No text. I've texted him and said, "Hey, saw you were in the hospital. Are you okay?" Nothing. Called his phone straight to voicemail. He changed his number. So it's a little odd. I mean, hey, I just wanted to
Interesting.
talk. Like, you were the one and only person to report my mom missing. So don't you think we should keep in contact? Or no? No, you don't think so? Like,
All of a
I thought.
sudden, we're not concerned. Like, we had this great concern to report it, but now, not
Now
so much.
I'm just gonna disappear too. Peace.
Like, good luck with that. Yeah, he'll be our next missing case.
I was just gonna say, maybe we should call and report him.
Where did Boggs go?
Find John
Oh, my
Taylor
goodness.
Boggs.
Yeah, I mean, like, I feel like Cogburn himself is putting in whatever he can put in. I feel
Yeah.
like you've had a hard time with, the department's reporting her in the beginning, but I feel like Cogburn has stepped up for you and done, like you said, he's willing to go travel out to talk to
Yeah.
Grandpa, and do those things. So I definitely don't want people being like, this isn't like a situation where we need to be like, Cogburn, you need to like get on it and like do your job.
Right.
Like, definitely not a situation there.
He'd kill me. He'd be like,
Yeah.
"What are you telling these people?
He'd be
'Cause
like,
I've done
he's like, I've done nothing but try to help.
nothing."
But definitely getting her face out there more, because we do hope that, we've talked about it before. In a homeless camp, there's no phones, there's no TikTok, there's
Yeah.
no Facebook, there's no update. Like, and that's getting someone that would drive by that, or that, has had people that come in and out of addiction, that go in and out of those camps, go, I saw her. Like, I know who
Well,
you're
that
talking about.
and schizophrenia runs in my family too. That's something we discussed like what a year ago or something like that. It's just that, if she has been down and out for all this time since she was 37 years old and she's 53 now, that's like a good chunk of like almost 20 years or so, give or take, that she had to like really get into that life of prostitution and drugs, and that stuff takes a toll on your brain. And then not to mention like this serious disease runs in my family. Like my uncle is to the point where he won't even speak to anyone anymore. I've told you. My uncle Michael, who's the youngest of them. So like you've got to consider she's the oldest. So she's had the most amount of time for these genetic things to catch up with her. And then the drugs on top of that, the prostitution, just the whole lifestyle. Like I could see her being embarrassed and being in a homeless camp somewhere. Like if my kids got taken away at 10 and 11 years old and now they're almost 30 and 29, like I'm going to be highly embarrassed of what I've become, even if it isn't, horrible. Like even if she's not still on the drugs, like even if she's recovered, I could see her just hiding out because of pure embarrassment. And then
Right.
also her criminal history. She could be hiding out because of that as well. So we don't know. I hope not. Like, but again, I hope she's also not deceased. So that could be the better of the two scenarios, is her being in a homeless camp and having schizophrenia or something like that. So.
Right. But if like you've said before, if she ever hears this, you love her and care about her no matter what she is, who she is, how she feels, what's going on, she is always welcome in your life.
Let me tell you, my uncle Michael was like a greaser. He worked on cars, he did that whole thing. The day that I showed up to my grandma's house and he sat down next to me and he was in a dress with grease still all over his hands and had nail polish all over his fingers, like he couldn't even think enough to put it on his hands. He sat down and I just said, "Hey, Uncle Michael, how are you? Love you."
Right.
You know, like, it's never going to be where I just, what do you think I'm going to do? Oh, you're a F in this, you're an F in... No, you're still my family member. You're still that person, and you're still loved. It doesn't matter. Like, my other family members have issues, and I'm still here accepting them. You know, they're refusing to look for my mom, and I'm still here accepting them. So it's really not a matter of any of that. It never has been. So.
Right. And it's good for her to hear that, because she does come from, you know, maybe a family that kind of did judge her. And, you know, it would be scary to come back to your kids if you think, well, they were raised by, you know, people that kind of judged me, and they've been around these people that judged me. You know, maybe they're not going to give me a chance or give me a shot the second I see them. But you would. And so, Jessica, like, you two don't care. Like,
heck no, man.
You just want her back.
Right.
Right.
That is first and foremost, for sure.
Well, I think that's a good spot to end it on. And hopefully people will join your Facebook page and your Twitter and just keep searching and sharing the story, because I think people don't understand how much the impact has, even if they're like, I heard this story, and they tell a coworker. Like, it's just... Yeah. Such a huge impact.
Right, because, you know, it's just so funny. You could tell someone, and then they come back to me and like, oh, I heard your story. Like, that could lift my spirits just for that day, even if it doesn't make the difference that you want. Like, that could change my life for the day. Like, oh, wow, someone else heard her, you know, and they're all the way over here. Or, you know, and I get messages sometimes, it's like, my family member is the same, and they're like, how do you deal with this, or like, what do you do when this happens? And like, I answer those people, and we have like awesome connections, and like, yesterday I didn't even know that person. You know, it's just amazing the amount of things that are positive that can come of something like this on a day-to-day basis. I had someone contact me and say that they thought that my mom was at the Fry's on the corner of this street and this street, and I was like, oh, that's where I work, that's so funny. And they were like, oh my God, it's probably you I've been seeing. So like, someone thought I was my mom. And like, that was just a whole experience in itself. And so like, just so awesome. So yeah, it doesn't matter. Just tell your aunts, tell your uncles, tell your friends, tell your cousins, tell your brothers. I tell everyone.
Right. Just share our story. That's all that matters.
Right.
Thank you guys so much for tuning in today and listening to the update episodes on the Seeking Diane miniseries. It means so much to Sherry every time someone hears Diane's story. I will be linking the Facebook that Sherry has set up for her mother Diane and the Twitter account on my sippingonsomecrime.com website so that you can follow along with the case and the updates. We have some projects coming up in the future related to Diane's case, so definitely follow those pages along for updates. Don't forget to like, share, and retweet those missing and murder posts you see on social media. Every time we share a face, we get closer to solving a case. Until next time.